Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Going to be reading this morning from First Canto, Chapter 10. Just a few verses that are remaining for the completion of Chapter 10. Because I'm reading consecutively, so we'll be reading texts 28, 29, and 30. This section, Chapter 10, is Krishna's departure from Hastinapur to Dwarka. And a particular portion of Krishna's departure is he's almost completely left the city. He's gone from the palace. He's on his chariot. The ladies from the palace come rushing out, crying out of separation from Krishna. They're all relatives of Krishna, related to Krishna, because they're part of the royal family, and Krishna is immediately a family member, a relative, so they have that affinity, but they're pure devotees, so their real affinity is for the Lord. And they feel that they can't check their crying out of separation, but they feel it's not good that their crying might create some inauspiciousness for Krishna's departure. So they want to stop crying. They can't stop crying. Prabhupada's comment is, most persons, if they felt a flood of tears and feelings for Krishna, they would think, wow, this is great. I finally made some feelings for Krishna. But they're so elevated that they're thinking, this may be inauspicious at the moment of Krishna's departure that we're crying. So they try to check their tears. They try to rub the tears back into their eyes with their hands. It doesn't work. And so they leave, go back inside. They go off to the rooftops and see Krishna from a distance. And the Pandavas come. There's like these varieties of exchanges according to position and according to rasa. So the Pandavas come. All five brothers. And Krishna sees the Pandavas coming and he approaches Yudhisthira. And he places his head at the feet of Yudhisthira, although he's the personality of Godhead. And Yudhisthira knows that he's the personality of Godhead. But he also knows Krishna's mood. And so he doesn't go, no, 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 you shouldn't do that, like people might do. Rather, he lifts Krishna and embraces him. Warm embrace. And then Krishna approaches Bhima and Arjuna. And because they're on the platform of age and of disposition, friends. It's very revealing. You can get some idea of when Bhimasen gets really, you know, chivalrous, feisty. His mood is friendship with Krishna. But of course, there's the superior and there's the junior of the two, and he wouldn't, out of devotion, he won't do anything other than what Krishna indicates. And towards his elder brother, he won't do anything other than what his elder brother indicates, although sometimes he wants to let it rip. He's checked by that relationship. So with Yudhisthira, with Bhima and Arjuna, they embrace. And Nakula and Sahadeva, they approach Krishna, they place their heads at the feet of Krishna. So Krishna's showing by example, it's cultural, how to exchange with different positions, social positions, although ultimately on the spiritual platform, those things don't matter. But Krishna observes them to teach by example. They don't matter because they're not ultimately real. But it's part of the joy, the happiness for Krishna. So to observe those things, and so the Pandavas observe those things, and as appropriate they interact. So Krishna gets on his chariot and the chariot starts to move, and that intensifies the feelings of separation. It's not only imminent, it's happening. Yudhisthira Maharaj has provided two divisions of soldiers, not just infantry, elephants and chariots and, you know, the whole thing. And the brahmanas come forward. They've prepared themselves and singing hymns from the Vedas. And the musicians, you know, that's what their gift is. So the musicians come and they play their instruments, drums and stringed instruments and bugles and trumpets, and this cacophony of different sounds as Krishna's chariot is rumbling down the road out of Hastinapur. And the wives of those who lost their lives in the battle of Kurukshetra, because the previous king, there were many, many other supporting personalities in their kingdom, and now these wives of such persons are without their husbands. But they're not feeling inimical to Krishna at all. They're feeling great love for Krishna. Envy checks love. So they're free from envy. And specifically, Sutta Goswami comments, they had never seen Krishna before. They're seeing Krishna for the first time. But based upon what they've heard, they have very deep understanding. They're not scholars like the brahmanas. They're not vastly learned in the teachings of the Vedas. But they've heard, they've all heard about Krishna. He's the center of katha, and because of that katha, they become enlightened. And as far as Krishna is concerned, Sutta says that the words of these ladies standing on the rooftops, simple words of glorification, that Krishna is more pleased by their words than by the hymns sung by the brahmanas. And there are two reasons that are given. One is the feeling with which they offer their words of praise of Krishna. And the second is that they're very personal, as opposed to the Vedas that often indirectly describe in terms as like tat. That. Or not specifically focusing on the personal feature, but the ladies were specifically focusing on the personal feature. They were very much appreciating the personal nature of Krishna, the loving nature of Krishna, the way in which Krishna... Then they start detailing the way in which Krishna exchanges loving dealings. They start with, like Queen Kunti in her prayers, her starting prayer is acknowledging that Krishna is the super soul. He, who is the Lord, within the heart of every living being, is standing before me. She's addressing Krishna. You are that super soul. Imagine having that realization. The person standing before me, he's that. It's like Dhruva in his meditation. He was seeing the super soul. The meditation broke, and then super soul was standing before him. Queen Kunti didn't do meditation like Dhruva, but she had the same realization. And the queens, no, excuse me, they're not queens, they're the wives, that on the rooftops, they're saying to one another, this personality going down the path, riding his chariot, he's that same supreme from whom all the universes emanate. Of course, it's Mahavishnu who is expansion, so it's also factual what they're saying. From this person, all the universes emanate. And unto whom all the universes enter, along with the conglomerate of all the living entities. And he maintains them all during the period of cosmic manifestation. There he is. And he's leaving. He's been with us and now he's going. So they're, in this way, verse after verse, appreciating who Krishna really is, which amplifies, intensifies their feelings. And it's a feeling of separation at this particular moment. And then they start to appreciate the devotees of Krishna, how fortunate they are. Particularly, they mention the residents of Vrindavan, but particularly mentioned are the residents of Dwaraka, because that's where Krishna is going. How fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan? They're constantly seeing the smiling face and the loving glances of the Supreme Lord. So, it's not a mundane thing, the loving glances. When Krishna glances, how powerful is that glance? When Mahavishnu glances, the whole creation comes into being. When Lord Ramachandra glances, the whole Indian Ocean boils. Those of you who have done some cooking, when you want to make some rice, how long does it take to boil a pot of rice? With maximum flame. And when there's a big feast, you need a big pot. How long does it take to boil the water? Imagine a lake. Imagine the ocean. How powerful is the glance of the Lord? So when he glances, it's not something worldly. It's an otherworldly glance, and they're appreciating, because as Krishna is passing, he knows, and he's glancing, and their hearts are filled. Specifically, it says, when he enters Dwaraka, the ladies are again on the rooftops out of shyness and seeing Krishna, and in their desire is as in Vrindavan, that Krishna could be their, become their husband. So their desire is the embrace of the Lord. But they're, because his glance is so powerful, his glance enters into their eyes and into their hearts, and their hearts become so satisfied as much as they had been embraced by Krishna. That's how powerful Krishna's glance is. So they're appreciating the residents of Dwarka. Of all the descriptions of rasas, the smile of Krishna, the glance of Krishna is something that they're always getting the benefit of. Like in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Gopal Kumar goes to visit the Pandavas, he's dancing and dancing. How fortunate you are. You are so dear to Krishna that whenever Krishna performs his worldly pastimes, you're with him. And they say, oh, how fortunate are we? Krishna's not here. The residents in Dwarka, the Yadu dynasty, they're the fortunate ones. We're always conspiring how to get Krishna to come. But Krishna's always there. Something be done with that. Undoubtedly, it is wonderful that Dwarka has defeated the glories of the heavenly planets. This is the last verse that I previously discussed. So, there's a hierarchy. The earthly planets, those who are residents of the earthly planets, appreciate the virtue of the heavenly planets and the long duration of life and the great opulence and the piety and so forth and so on. And even, Prabhupada says, even the scientists, they want to go there. They're making their plans how by rocket ships they can go there. And even the scientists speak about the relative factor of time, Einstein's theory of relativity. So, on the heavenly planets, the duration of life is so much longer. 6 months of earthly time is equal to 1 day of the heaven, and 1 night of the heaven is the other 6 months, and so 1 whole year, 12 months passing here is 1 day there, and the duration of life is 10,000 years in comparison to our 100 years. So long duration of life, great opulence, beauty, strength, intelligence, opulences, mystic powers even. But compared to this earth planet, where because of the presence of Dwarka, its fame has eclipsed the notoriety of the heavenly planets. The demigods, they come here to see Krishna. They leave their place and they want to go see Krishna on the earth planet. So how much the earth planet has become glorified by Dwarka. Why? Because Krishna resides there. The Prabhupada describes the three places, Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And these are eternal abodes. Just as the soul is eternal and the Lord is eternal, the abodes are eternal. And the Lord makes his abode manifest in those three places on this earth. So how much glorious are those places that the Lord comes to descend? He writes, whoever has been favored with the smiling glance of the Lord shall never again come back to this rotten earth. Not complimentary. Which is certified by the Lord Himself as a place of misery. So, while we're hearing this glorification, we should be careful not to think of it as simply eulogy or, you know, comparing one material thing to another material thing. The abode of the Lord and He Himself are not different as the name of the Lord and He Himself are not. So the glorifications of these ladies is appropriate. How fortunate are the residents of Dwarka. So now, text 28, they get really specific. And they speak about the wives of Krishna. Then they start speaking about the names of the wives of Krishna. And then they start speaking about the names of the sons of the wives of Krishna. And the names of the sons of the sons of the wives of Krishna. They start really drilling down and appreciating how fortunate are they in the various ways. Oh, friends, just think of his wives, whose hands he has accepted. How they must have undergone vows, baths, fire sacrifices, and perfect worship of the Lord of the universe to constantly relish now the nectar from his lips. The damsels of Brajabhumi would often faint just expecting such favors. So they're thinking that damsels of the queens, his wives in Dwarka, even more fortunate. How fortunate. Prabhupada spends, it's a long purport, and spends a great deal of time describing how the activities mentioned in the Vedas that are auspicious and bringing piety to the individual, what's the purpose? If one is not Krishna conscious, the purpose is to bring piety. And then what's the purpose of that piety? Elevation. Elevation to say more qualified to be an enjoyer. Dharma artha kama. And after this life, elevation to the heavenly planets where there's even better facility. According to the teachings of Rupa Goswami, thinking like that is a cause of falling from one's spiritual position, even engaging in pious activities. Or conversely, neglecting those pious activities is a cause of falling from one's spiritual position. So it's not the activity in and of itself that is so coveted or valued. Although we can't ignore them. Pious activities are properly performed duties of life. The value is to help qualify one, which is exactly what these wives are saying, to qualify one to be in Krishna's presence, to make one fit, to be sufficiently elevated in character and quality, to be before Krishna. What to speak of a wife of Krishna. Here's some of the statements that Prabhupada makes. Religious rites prescribed in the scriptures are meant to purify the mundane qualities of the conditioned souls, to enable them to be gradually promoted to the stage of rendering transcendental service unto the Supreme Lord. It's the step towards a greater fortune. The rites, so then he describes these girls, that's the girls in Vrindavan who performed austerities to get Krishna as their husband, the worship of Katyayani and the very difficult vrata that they observe for one whole month during the coldest month of the year. They're bathing early in the morning in the river Jamuna, freezing, and taking only one meal a day of unspiced khichdi. For what purpose? To have Krishna as her husband. Or what's now being appreciated, who knows what austerities and rituals and rites were performed by those who became his queens in Dwaraka. These girls, as well as the queens, underwent severe penances by taking vows, bathing, and offering sacrifices in the fire, as prescribed in the scriptures. However, the rites, as they are not the end in themselves, nor are fruitive action, culture of knowledge, or perfection of mystic powers ends in themselves. They are all means to attain the highest stage of svarup, to render constitutional transcendental service to the Lord. So Prabhupada has introduced this word svarup, and he uses it several times because he's used it also previously in purports. What does svarup mean? Svarup. Svarupa means one's spiritual form, spiritual identity. And in that spiritual form, spiritual identity, there's spiritual activity. So we can practice on this platform to do that which is our svarup. The purpose of practicing on this platform is to attain svarup, that spiritual form. Prabhupada writes, attainment of this stage of pure spiritual life, through this means to get to the pure spiritual life, is the highest perfection. And this stage is called svarupa, or the factual identity of the living being. Liberation means renovation of this stage of svarupa. So the activities are to help one attain that stage of svarupa. So the dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the idea of moksha that is commonly understood is sayuja, merging, like we were hearing last night, being one. But the stage of, in the language of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the fifth dimension is, in that liberated stage, what is one's liberated form, liberated activities, direct loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Direct loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one can, by bhakti, even in the practicing stage, one can engage in direct service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even we're doing our ordinary things. Even we're doing our ordinary things. Direct. It's vidhi sadhana bhakti, it's practice of those activities we do in the liberated stage. What is the perfection? We don't even need a material body anymore, because one has a spiritual body, and in that spiritual body engage in the very same activities we do in the practicing stage. Or say it the other way, the practicing stage is the very same activities we do in the perfectional stage. And it's just an opportunity to make that connection, that link with the Lord, including what we're doing right now. Literally, just hearing topics about Krishna. Because what did the ladies who were standing on the rooftops, like us, they had never seen Krishna. But they'd heard about Krishna. And they could understand who is Krishna. And how fortunate are those who have Krishna's association? What one must do to become eligible? If you're not on that platform of liberation, you can't pretend it, but you can practice on this platform. And the practices that we do on this platform connect us with, directly connect us with Krishna. That's the purpose. It's a double-edged instrument, because if we, just like I mentioned, if we don't understand and we and therefore neglect, then consciousness goes down. And if we don't understand and perform, then it leads to this pravritti. We do because of some material motive. We're thinking it'll improve our piety, or like we were hearing last night, improve altruism. He even used the word altruism, philanthropy. So improve the condition of the world. It's just the extended sense of self, selfishness in the name of selflessness, but extended well-being of self. And it's pravritti. And where does pravritti lead one? It leads one to an elevated position where one again takes another birth and for some time enjoys the delights of heavenly existence, but still in the position of enjoying. Because the idea of becoming without ego is there happens to be a soul that animates the body, and that soul has its self, its true ego, or in this language, svarup. And there are things that the soul does in that liberated platform. It's so to say, no ego is shunyavadi. It's zero. What's left after no ego? You have no self, and of course, no supreme. So, where does that go? At best, it's increasing the well-being within the material situation, and that leads to bondage. So, we need a spiritual conception of what we do on this platform, and that spiritual conception can't be minus the personality of Godhead and minus the soul. Because how is that a spiritual conception? Minus the personality of Godhead and minus the soul. It's platitude, but it's not a spiritual conception. And with the spiritual conception, even ordinary things, if done with spiritual conception in the proper consciousness, just like the simple village girls worshipping Katyayani. We want Krishna as our husband. Otherwise they become fruitive activities. Pious, but fruitive activities. And there's another point, is in the purport Prabhupada spends some time, little, discussing Swakya and Parakya. Swakya and Parakya. Swakya is love in marriage. Parakya is love outside of marriage. So, how do we understand those things? Our tendency would be to understand those things in terms of our mundane experience. You know, boy-girl have a relationship outside of marriage, and boy-girl have a relationship inside marriage. That's how we would tend to look at such a thing. But it's not appropriate to look at such a thing where Krishna has his marriage to the queens and Krishna has relationships with the gopis out of marriage. One looks pious and the other looks impious. The looking glass is the lens is the wrong lens. What is the merit for us on our platform to hear such things, right, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam? The merit is to understand that the object or the source of everything, as the ladies are seeing, he's the source of everything. It's a person. And since he's the source of everything, he can have varieties of relationships with everything, and it's perfectly virtuous. Rabindrasarup Prabhu told this story, a description with Prabhupada once, when he was still doing his PhD in, I guess, philosophy of religion or something like that. Prabhupada was visiting in Philadelphia, and he knew that Prabhupada liked to meet with educated people and, you know, professors and government leaders and so on. So he made an arrangement for Prabhupada to meet with his PhD professor, his, you know, the one who was supervising his PhD work. And the professor was learned, and when they got in the room, the first thing the man said is, "How can you worship someone who is such a debauchee?" And Rabindra said he shrank. He just felt, "I want to disappear. I've invited Prabhupada to come and be insulted by this man." He just felt terrible. But Prabhupada didn't bat an eyelid. He immediately said, "Krishna is not the debauchee, you are the debauchee." And the man said, "What?" And Prabhupada said, "Every living entity is Krishna's part and parcel. Every living entity has expanded from Krishna, and those living entities are Krishna's to enjoy. You are thinking one of them is for your enjoyment. And you're calling that religious. I say you're the debauchee. She is Krishna's property, not yours. You're the debauchee." Rabindra didn't feel better as he was hearing what Prabhupada said. He was thinking, "Well, wait a minute. I'm also married. And that, you know, what applies to my professor applies to me too. That means I'm a debauchee, and, you know, but, you know, we're duly married." And so it was a very traumatic experience, Rabindra shared. He said, you know, he was up all night long. He couldn't sleep. He was thinking, you know, here I've taken shelter of a person who's telling me that I'm a debauchee. Like, you know, the first was he was upset with Prabhupada, and then he was upset with the message of Prabhupada, and then he was disturbed that, why am I disturbed? And by morning time, he had this realization. He said that the real issue is, I have issues with Krishna. I'm seeing my wife as my property instead of Krishna's property. My property, lawful property, religiously lawful property, to be enjoyed by me, rather than seeing this is Krishna's property, and he has sanctioned a relationship whereby we can assist one another to serve Krishna. And so I think it's going to take a while for me to work through this. But at least now my spiritual master has pointed out what my issue with Krishna is. So the tendency is to look at Krishna's position in a context of our worldly conceptions of things, not in the spirit, because we're conditioned. And very, very mercifully and repeatedly and gently, but clearly Prabhupada is, in his purports in Vyasa Deva the Bhagavatam, is elevating us out of that material conception to a spiritual conception. He concludes this purport by saying that this stage that's attained by the wives of Krishna comes after many lifetimes. Always Prabhupada encouraged us, finish your business in this one lifetime. But we shouldn't be surprised if it takes us more than one lifetime. That shouldn't discourage us if it takes more than one lifetime. We need to connect our activities presently with the goal. And the goal is a person. It's not a means to some other end. It's when it's connected to Krishna, that's the end. To connect everything with Krishna. Once again. And like our, so what are the activities of mentioned by the queens and also for the ladies of Vrindavan? Is their baths and their austerities and their rituals. So our primary practice or ritual or Vedic sacrifice is our chanting of the holy name. And when the chanting of the holy name is just not, it's not just a means of beating the mind down so we can function. Or as one devotee was describing, to fix your day so you can do it, you can do your day in devotion to Krishna. It's immediately opportunity to associate directly with Krishna. And to elevate our consciousness so that all the rest of what we do in the course of the day is also by consciousness, by dint of Krishna consciousness, offered to Krishna. So how important those very special activities, direct devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping. Text 29. So after the queens in Dwarka comes the children of the queens of Dwarka. The children of these ladies are Pradyumna, Samba, Amba, etc. The ladies like Rukmini, Satyabhama, and Jambavati were forcibly taken away by him from their Swayambhar ceremonies after he defeated many powerful kings headed by Shishupal. And other ladies were also forcibly taken away by him after he killed Bhomasura and thousands of his assistants. All of those ladies are glorious. So again, connecting this message with the previous message, as the abode of the Lord is not different than the Lord, so the glorification of Dwarka is appropriate. These are direct associates of Krishna, so the glorifications of these ladies is also appropriate. And the drama or the leela of how they became wives of Krishna is also glorious. Were it not in relation to Krishna, it's not at all glorious. It's not at all even interesting. But because it's in relation to Krishna, it's glorious. So, mentioned here are three by name, Rukmini, Satyabhama, and Jambavati, being taken during their Swayambhar. Only one of them was taken from her Swayambhar by Krishna, that's Rukmini. Satyabhama and Jambavati were both presented by their father to Krishna after some misfortune where they were opposing Krishna. And in a very wonderful way, the mistake of their opposing Krishna was reversed, and then they came to recognize who Krishna is. At least Jambavan came to recognize who Krishna is. Satrajit was more diplomacy than necessarily recognizing Krishna as the personality of Godhead. But the 16,100 princes, Prabhupada writes, beautiful girls who are daughters of many kings were forcibly stolen by Bhomasura, who kept them captive for his carnal desire. These girls prayed piteously to Lord Krishna for their deliverance. So Krishna heard their prayer and he came and delivered them. To deliver them, there was a big fight. The Mura demon had to be killed. And so many Mura's associates and Bhomasura and Bhomasura's associates in big fight. Thousands were killed. Single-handedly Krishna did, and then the princes were, what do we do now? And looking to Krishna that, please marry us, because who will marry us? And well, we'll all be without husbands, so 16,100 of us, please marry us. So, because of their love for Krishna, Krishna had come and Krishna married them. And mundane persons think, oh, fairy tale. Or they think, what a lusty man. Prabhupada's answer is, why only 16,000? 16 million. All living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna, but that there are that many who are in pure devotion, thus eligible to become Krishna's wives. How wonderful that is that they've attained that state of pure devotion. They want only Krishna as their husband. Like Rukmini wanted only Krishna as her husband. Prabhupada describes the wish of Rukmini's father, the king of Vidarbha, to marry his daughter to Krishna. But his older son, Rukmini, didn't like that. Rather, he wanted his sister to marry Shishupa. And after all, Shishupa was a cousin of Krishna. And he just had Parshya. So the father was in this dilemma, how do we keep peace in the family? So he didn't want to disturb the family mood, and so reluctantly he was going along with, okay, my daughter can marry Shishupal. For her, it was no way will I marry that Shishupal. And so the drama unfolded where Krishna came at Rukmini's request and gave the detail, because she's princess, she knows diplomacy. Here's how you can do it. This is the right time, the right place, the right circumstance. And Krishna came and like a lion capturing a lamb, right in the midst of all the kings. Whoa! Big fight, and Krishna defeated them. And from Rukmini, 10 sons, headed by Pradyumna. And each of the other, Prabhupada details this, he would like to speak about. So 16,100 times 10 times 10, because each of the sons had 10 sons. So the immediate family of Krishna was 10 million. That's the number here. Whoa. That's a big family. How to maintain such a big family? For Krishna, no problem. He's the all-opulent Supreme Lord. How many times Prabhupada would say, not just he married 16,000, but he made a palace for each one, and the palaces were filled with precious jewels, rubies and diamonds and emeralds and coral and marble palaces. 16,000. And not only that, he expanded himself into 16,000 forms, so that not one of the queens were thinking, oh, when will Krishna come to my palace? At the end of about 5 years, maybe, I'll see him. Continuously. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the description is not only continuously, but different things at different times of day were happening simultaneously. Krishna was like moving time, like one might move an instrument with bellows, like, you know, harmonium or accordion. Sometimes when Narada went to visit in Dwaraka, he would see Krishna was seated on the throne, ruling and considering matters along with Ugrasena. Sometimes Krishna was playing with his children at night. It was, but it was the same time of the day. He would go from one palace to the next palace, and sometimes he was just waking up in the morning, and sometimes he was meditating upon himself as he would do his sadhana in the morning. And different activities. Because Krishna is not limited. He's not limited by time and space or day and night. And when he would rise in the morning, the Bhagavatam describes, he would merge into all 16,108 Krishnas, would merge into one Krishna and enter into the assembly hall. And when the assembly was over, he would expand himself into 16,108 Krishnas. Can anybody do that? So when Krishna's with the queens and engaging in what for us would be mundane dealings, talking, embracing, and so forth, dealing with worldly affairs, not so for Krishna. It's just reciprocation of loving dealings. How fortunate are these personalities? How elevated are they? So that's what these ladies are appreciating. And finally, this is the last in that in this section. All these women auspiciously glorified their lives, despite their being without individuality and without purity. It's a very curious way of saying this. Their husband, the lotus-eyed personality, never left them alone at home. He always pleased their hearts by making valuable presentations. Valuable presentations, Prabhupada refers to the parijata. Once Krishna was going to visit Indra and Satyabhama was with him. So she knew that Krishna had presented a parijata flower to Rukmini, so she said, I want a parijata tree. Krishna said, very well. And when he tried to take a parijata tree from the heavenly planets where only parijata flowers grow, Indra protested. So it was a fight. Guess who won? Krishna brought the parijata tree to Satyabhama, who was very happy. for making valuable presentations, pleasing their hearts. Not because he's a hempecked husband that, oh, my wife wants the latest thing, so I got to go get one. It's a loving exchange in Krishna's case. So the statement here is that all these women auspiciously glorified their lives despite their being without individuality, without purity. The message that Prabhupada is explaining from that is that no prior qualification is necessary. Rather, through the medium of devotional service, one's disqualifications are driven away and one's qualifications become awakened and manifest. Here he writes it. The devotees of the Lord are purified souls, which is different than saying in the verse they're without purity. They're purified. As soon as the devotees surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord sincerely, the Lord accepts them. And thus the devotees at once become freed from all material contaminations. So, without purity, with purity. Without purity, minus Krishna. With purity, surrender sincerely. Krishna accepts, impurity driven away. Such devotees are above the three modes of nature. And then again he writes, by engagement in the service of the Lord, the designative disqualifications are removed, and as pure souls, they become eligible to enter into the kingdom of God. So in between those two statements, there's a description of less than perfected souls who, by approach to the Lord in sincere devotion, become purified. He gives a very curious example. He says that when the Ganges water and filthy drain water mix and amalgamate, then there's no distinction. Which is very interesting. So, he said it in a curious way, but in other circumstances, he describes that the Ganges can't be contaminated. One can bathe in the Ganges, even in Calcutta, he would describe, people would, the Brahmanas, in even in modern times, would go to the Ganges for purification. But, you know, there's so much industrial waste and so many other unmentionable things. But it's purifying. So that which is pure, like Krishna, in contact with that which is impure, makes the impure pure. That's the idea. It's not a one-to-one comparison because you put some pollutant into water and it becomes polluted. But the Ganges is pure. And, you know, water and pure water and impure water mix, they become, to a degree, diluted with contamination. The Ganges water remains, it's still pure. And in this case, Krishna is untouched by his presence within our heart. He doesn't mix with matter. The soul doesn't mix with matter either. The soul is pure. And if the soul can turn attention fully to Krishna and surrender, then the pure quality of the soul comes out. Conversely, if the attention of the soul is directed away from Krishna towards matter, then consciousness becomes contaminated. The soul is still pure, but the consciousness becomes contaminated. That's the 24th element, Chaitana, contaminated consciousness. consciousness directed towards matter and an enjoying spirit. So instead of the enjoying spirit in the surrender and service to Krishna spirit, and then in particular, because this section is describing different rasas, the sons of Krishna had servitude, the friends of Krishna had friendship, the queens of Krishna and the ladies of Vrindavan had conjugal affection. So, for this engagement, I'll read it again, by engagement in the service of the Lord, the designative disqualifications are removed. The designative disqualifications, it's like how Prabhupada would translate upadi, sarvupadi vinirbhuktam tat paratvina nirbalam. Upadi is a designation. If designative disqualifications, that's identification with the body, which we're not. So how to get this designative disqualification removal program going? It's devotional service, but devotional service that needs to be, must be directed. Just having this discussion with one devotee who he likes devotional service. He's ready to do any devotional service. And sometimes when he does his devotional service so enthusiastically, he doesn't take other devotees' devotional service into consideration and makes a problem. For the other person, at least. And then, you know, for the community of devotees. So, it requires training. We need a little training program for this very enthusiastic. He's heard the message, devotional service. Here it is. By engagement in the service of the Lord, the designated disqualifications are removed, and as pure souls, they become eligible to enter the kingdom of God. Devotional service, here we come, look out. So there's need for training in devotional service under proper guidance. And the topic that I'd like to speak about in our next session is, that's the topic, the importance of training in devotional service. It won't be a Bhagavatam class discussion, it'll just be a other type of discussion, and then questions and answers. The importance of that, why, and what, and how. Two other points. The fact that Krishna expanded himself into so many Krishnas, Prabhupada says, it's supported in the Shruti mantras. It's not only described here in the Bhagavatam. The Shruti mantras say that the Lord can expand himself into many. Eko bahusham. One becomes many. So the impersonalists take that one way, and the personalists, devotees, take it a different way. And here's how Prabhupada is directing us to take it. Krishna has expanded himself into many Krishnas, and for that matter, Krishna has extended his potency into many. So, Krishna is associating with his potency. This is one of the principal arguments of Jiva Goswami, scriptural arguments, of why Krishna's performance of rasa dance does not fall in the category of something irreligious. If we were to do it, it's irreligious, like Prabhupada's comment to this professor. You're the debauchee. Enjoying another man's wife. You're the debauchee. She's Krishna's wife. Of course, then there's religious marriage that Krishna approves, but Krishna expands himself into many. As husband of so many wives, he pleased them all with presentations, even at a costly endeavor. Conclusion. If, therefore, anyone desires the Lord to become one's husband, the Lord fulfills such desires in full. Slight little footnote. You have to be qualified. Oh. But it's not, you know, like some kind of mundane affair where you go to Queen College or something. You get a certificate and then you become Krishna's queen. It's not like that. Not a mundane matter. It's qualifying oneself. Again, this points to proper training or application of this very powerful principle of bhakti. How to properly apply this principle of bhakti so that as one desires Krishna, so we're far away from having such desire. But as the path of bhakti develops, then, you know, the creeper of devotion matures, and as the creeper of devotion matures, it's not just, you know, finish your 16 rounds a day and somehow manage to follow the four regular principles. The creeper of bhakti unfolds and spiritual aspiration becomes stronger, and the material attraction becomes weakened, and the spiritual aspiration becomes stronger. It's our relationship with Krishna, it becomes the center, our loving attraction for Krishna. And then it becomes even more particular and more particular and more particular as we become mature in Krishna consciousness. So the material affinity part and the spiritual attraction part is what we'll be discussing a little bit later. Any discussion or questions? Anybody? Yes. Well, I could see, you know, the somehow or other part is that we recognize that Krishna is a person. And I can suggest a few prominent ways. One is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, because it makes it very clear that Krishna is a person. Repeatedly and very, very expertly and very powerfully. Krishna is a person. And in the manner in which we chant, that's not mechanical but very personal. So approach chanting as one approaches a person, because Krishna's name and Krishna are non-different. So, by cultivation of that mood while chanting. And the third is the service that we render. Let the service that we render become very personal. You turn it around and say, if somebody approaches you with some service, and it's very personal. It's so much more pleasing than, you know, here's your prasadam, you know, something that's very personal. So, in the interactions with one another, the services that we do with one another, let them be very personal. Cultivate that. So the first two are direct devotional practices that we do daily. Hearing and japa. Interacting with the Bhagavatam and interacting, or Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, and interacting with the holy name. And our service to the devotees. And again, I recommend think in terms of how it's the golden rule. Treat others as you would want others to treat you. So that's a service mood. And you would want it to be personal. Even if there's mistakes or flaws in the execution, if it's highly personal, it's very pleasing. So let us act in such a way to be pleasing to another person. That is personal. Those are very powerful mediums. Consider those are three of the five most important activities of devotion, devotional service. Yes. It's not just an exhibition of potency, it's an exhibition of love. What's the big deal part is potency. And Prabhupada even said it himself. Not exactly the language, what's the big deal, but for Krishna, 16,000 wives is nothing. 16 million unlimited. Because his potencies are unlimited. But the big deal, or the very unique thing, is those multiple of equal potency expansions are to reciprocate the love with each of the queens. Because had it not been that way, what would have been the result? They would have been married to Krishna and never see him. He's always with another one of the queens. But that wasn't the case. To accept them as queens, he expanded himself out of his love for them and accepting their love. Comparable, not exactly the same, is the experience of the cowherd boys when they would have their lunch. Krishna didn't expand himself into as many forms of Krishna as there are cowherd boys, but it's described that each of the cowherd boys felt that Krishna is attached to me. And they felt fulfilled and uniquely satisfied. And each of them was feeling the same thing. Krishna is attached to me. And similarly, that's referenced in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was engaged in these Rath Yatra, Sankirtan pastime. And each of the persons in the Sankirtan party felt that Mahaprabhu was attached to me. Not only that they were attached to him, but he was attached to them. And Maharaj Prataparudra saw that and could understand that by dint of realization and felt so fortunate that he was being given that realization. So that's the big deal. fully satisfying the heart's desire of innumerable living entities according to their love for him. Up to and including manifesting personal forms for each one. Another comparable situation, and this gets detailed in Vachitanya's teachings with Sanatana Goswami. There's names, there's like particular names for when Krishna manifests identical forms that do different things. There's a term, technical term, I forget which it is, Prakash or Vilas. So, towards the end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna goes to visit King Shrutadev, or King Bahulashva. And then there's Shrutadev, the Brahmin. So he reaches Bahulashva's kingdom. And both are desiring that Krishna would come to their home. So it's a dilemma. Except for Krishna, he just manifested two Krishnas. And both are fully satisfied. So one is, wow, who can manifest two forms of themselves? It's Krishna's opulence. But more specifically, it's the love to a fully satisfying degree. That's the special thing. And how Krishna does in different leelas the same thing is diverse because he's not restricted. It's not like, you know, he's got a cookie cutter way of doing things and that's all he can do. He can do however he wants. So it's diverse, but through diverse leelas, the principle is fulfilling in fullness the heart's desire of his devotee. That's the very personal part. Anything else?
Will there be any experiences like when we make progress in the spiritual path towards Krishna? And how, if there is such an experience, how to recognize and appreciate that experience so that we continue moving forward?
Well, there's so many types of experience that one might have. And any of those experiences, how to process them is with a grateful heart. Whoever, whatever that may be. One of the things that's a direct reciprocation with Krishna, especially in our beginning stages of spiritual life, is recognizing that Krishna is providing so many resources for us. It's Krishna. Like, you know, the Bhagavatam. And the Bhaktivedanta purports of the Bhagavatam. I mean, during Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, it was hard to find a Bhagavatam. And how fortunate we are, you know, people, you have people knocking at your door. Please take this Bhagavatam. Or, you know, you go online and a few clicks and you got a Bhagavatam coming, the whole set coming to your front door. With color pictures and, you know, nicely plastic covered so it won't get... resource. And, you know, association of devotees. And deity worship and standards and teachings and the holy name and, you know, wow. And then the particular personalities that can be of assistance to us in particular ways that we need assistance. If we just avail ourselves to those. if our gratitude light goes on, Krishna will send even more. And it's Krishna. We can look with appreciation to those particular resources, but behind the resource is Krishna. They're manifestations of Krishna's mercy. And that's a nice realization. And as we're feeling those feelings of gratitude, that is the blossoming of our feelings of love, the seed of awakening of our feelings of love. And as that feelings of love awaken, so many more realizations will come. Although the resources may already be there, we're just not tuned into the right channel. We're in the closed and struggling on our own mode, the doership paradigm. Okay. Yes. Yes.
So what is the position or the future of the person who is doing the current of the activity? Like after ATI or...
Yeah.
What is the future of position?
Covered? I don't know... the doctor well enough to know, what's in his heart. Is there opposition to the personality of Godhead? Or just, a surface appreciation of something like philanthropy and altruism, and there's no real opposition, but there's no acknowledgement either. So, the real test, in response to your question, is regard for Krishna. Regard for the source of everything, the Supreme Person. That's the real test. So at least ignorance and unfortunate ignorance. But there may or may not be opposition. And depending upon that one factor, regard for Krishna, the disposition toward Krishna, toward the Supreme Person, that's going to determine the answer to your question, what's the destination for such a person? Is that... It all depends upon their acceptance of the mercy that Krishna gives. Like last night, there was an opportunity. He took prasadam, he associated with devotees, he heard. At least he had the opportunity. Krishna provided the opportunity. And so now what's his regard for Krishna? Now he read the peace formula. I put one on in front of him, and he read it, and he picked up on one thing. His idea. What resonated with his idea is where the light went on. So I took from that he's not averse to Krishna, but he's not on the Krishna channel either. It's agata sukriti more than anything for what happened for him last night. Yes? Hi, Krishna.
Also, the concept of the Queen Katharina has that when we get services also that we don't recognize religious exactly that the world is having its own enthusiastic, but we didn't see that. The same thing happens to me that sometimes it's not, you recognize that, but then when it comes to practical application, you lose that in gratitude, the attitude of a gratitude towards that devotee, or how to develop that and keep that so that in every situation you will not have that jealousy or ego with the other devotee and let them also, let them serve.
Nice question. First, an important comment. Sanatan Goswami discusses this in Brihat Bhagavatamrita explicitly, namely that Satyabhama's behavior is not jealousy. Rather, she behaves the way that she behaves, knowing that is pleasing to Krishna. And Krishna gets on her case. And she's very happy. Because she knows that it's pleasing to Krishna. Something like, different, but something like Radha's becoming angry. Krishna likes that very much. But we see, you know, Krishna cries. He tries to break the mood of Radha's anger. And her mood doesn't break. She remains angry. Krishna likes. It's not like boy, girl, and the girl's playing hard to get and the boy likes it. It's not like that. That's mundane. It's pure love. There's no ego. There's no jealousy. And it's all induced by the internal potency because of that pure love for Krishna. Now, in our case, that's not the case. We're in the material condition of life where we value loving relationships and we're blocked from loving relationships because in our heart there's this other thing. There's envy, there's jealousy, there's anger, there's greed, there's pride. The entry point, and we'll come back out from that same entry point. The entry point is there's no substitute for purity. And what's the price of purity? The price of purity is Krishna is everything. Not that I'm nothing, like we heard last night, but Krishna is everything. And for us, how do we know what Krishna wants? What is Krishna's wanting? Our connection is through our spiritual master. So what our spiritual master wants is everything. Deep attachment for that which our spiritual master wants, and that determines not only what we do, but what we feel. That's the price for purity. And we're not there. And because we're not there, we struggle with these other things. The struggle, we know from Bhagavad Gita, is very difficult. Duratyaya. You can struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle, and it's an endless struggle. unless we surrender to Krishna. We can easily cross beyond the struggle. So the point of going beyond those shortcomings is the surrender to Krishna part. One devotee was sharing with me from the japa retreat we just had, was that one realization was that to be able to connect with Krishna in the form of His holy name, it's not just His effort. There must be the mercy factor. Otherwise, struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle. So what makes us eligible for the mercy? Because Krishna wants to give mercy, and we've got our filters up. It's making effort. Krishna sees the effort, but in our making of effort, do we want Krishna's mercy? And if we want Krishna's mercy, we get Krishna's mercy. So what do we want? We'll go back to the situation that you described. You know, the competition or jealousy. I'm planning for there's a group of teenagers in Chicago. They formed a little group called Soul Connection, and you know, they just had a camp, and one of the things at the camp that one of the directors of the camp wanted was a competition. Who is the best camper? So I told the director, I already had the conversation with the director. That goes completely against all the training that they're being given. So that competition thing should disappear, and in its place should come elevating the other through our humble service to them, and that should be our mood. Why? It's pleasing to the spiritual master and it's pleasing to Krishna. Again, why should we adopt that? Well, it's not just because it's an antidote for our envy and our jealousy and our pride and our anger, and although it is. It's not just, you know, take the bitter medicine. It's out of taking shelter of what pleases Guru and Krishna, that's everything for me. Borrowing Krishna's phrase in Bhagavad Gita, avyavachari bhakti, mam cha yogyavichari in a bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati tyaitan brahma boyaya kalpate. Sagunan samatityaitan. One at once goes beyond the gunas. And these other things is gunas. It's not us. We're being conditioned by those mean guys, those gunas, or ladies. Modes of nature. Bah! I don't want to serve you anymore. But they've got control of us. Try as you may, they got control of us. So you surrender to Krishna. Now once again, what is surrender to Krishna? What's the indication? What does Krishna want? The instructions of the spiritual master. What's the teachings that we're receiving? To take the position of humble servant. Okay, I'll take the position of humble servant. Let me try to elevate, please, and serve the other devotees. Just like this, the first question and answer that was given. That's my mandate. That's my instruction. That's my life. My instruction is my life and soul. And then we take the it's positive. You take the instruction as your life and soul, and it displaces the gunas instead of struggling with them. You cross beyond it. Now, back to the starting point. There's no substitute for purity. And there's a price. So I plan to spend some time with the Soul Connection group next time I'm with them and give them some training, because they're going to be our future leaders. They need to learn this. Competition is not where it's at, because competition breeds envy. That's not where it's at. Service is where it's at. And, you know, what kind of, so training, what kind of service? Humble service. What's the purpose of service? It's to please the other person. Because that's pleasing to Guru and Krishna. Take shelter there, displaces the other. So that there, the seed is in the instruction, and then you grow the seed. You take the instruction in your heart and you cultivate it. And if the mind goes to this other business, you bring the mind back. On what strength do you bring the mind back? On the strength of the commitment to pleasing the spiritual master. It's my life and soul. It's love, in short. And love displaces darkness. Anything else? Yes? Yes. Everything. How to stay tuned in. There's no substitute for purity. Strive for purity. And when you hear some indicators of what is it, take shelter. Cultivate with that purpose in mind. The medium is devotional service. The object is Krishna. And we're the subject. Trying to carry feelings of love through the medium of service to the object. That's Rupa Goswami's language, the science of rasa. Ashraya and vishaya. And the medium is the service. So from our side, let there be purity. So we strive for purity, and then same message as before, like with chanting, this sharing about a message about chanting. On my own, I must make effort, but my own is not enough. I require mercy. To get this purity, I require mercy. And then connect with this other, you know, realizations question. Mercy is through those resources that Krishna sends. Because without those resources that Krishna sends, forget it, I'm finished. I'm nowhere, up a creek without a paddle. I'm in big trouble. And the current is moving really fast. But Krishna's given us so many resources. That's a big time realization. And from that realization, then so much deeper appreciation for Krishna and love for Krishna and more resources, because we're eligible. So from wherever we are, we're taking up the process of bhakti, and we have to operate from whatever we are. We can't pretend that we are what we aren't, or lament that we aren't what we are, or we are what we aren't. You work with what you have and set the goal for purity and cultivate that with the resources that Krishna has provided. Krishna has no shortage of resources. Be really clear what we're striving for, purity. Always in the mood of humble service. And when this other thing comes up that says something else, that's not purity. It's not me, it's not the instruction, it's not shelter. Purity. You go to the feet of that other person who you're having some, whatever it is, bad feeling towards, and offer your head at their feet? How can, or if not literally and physically, at least in your heart, try to serve and please that devotee? Why? Pleasing to the spiritual master and Krishna. And that's everything for me. At least I want to get there. So the commitment to that. Avyavichari Bhakti. Rupa Goswami's teaching is, even if one is the neophyte position, if one accepts that as one's goal and strives according to the teachings that are given, the mature fruit is going to be pure devotional service. So whatever my position, I can't lament over what my position is. I can't lament over the last mantra that I chanted, but I can chant this mantra with trying for proper attention and depending upon Krishna for his mercy, so I can chant this or do this next act of service with this devotee or these devotees. In the mood of humble service, because it's pleasing to Guru and Krishna. Each moment is another opportunity. Each mantra is another opportunity. Each event of our life is an opportunity. And Krishna provides the resources so we can do it. Because on our own, it's just a struggle. Something else? Okay, breakfast. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.